Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 28, Kapila's instructions on devotional service, text 29. Brijyanukampita dieha grihita murte.
Brijyanukampita dieha grihita murte.
Sanchintayat Bhagavato Bhadanaravindam.
Sanchintayat Bhagavato Bhadanaravindam.
Yadvishpuran Makarakunda Bhagitena.
Yadvishpuran Makarakunda Bhagitena.
Vidyotitamalakapolam Udaranasam.
Vidyotitamalakapolam Udaranasam.
Anukampita jya, out of compassion, iha, in this world, grihita murte, who presents different forms, sanchindaya, one should meditate on, bhagavata, of the personality of Godhead, vadana, countenance, Aravindam, lotus light. Yat,
which.
Vispuran,
glittering.
Makara, alligator shaped.
Kundala,
of his earrings.
Bhagitena,
by the oscillation.
Vidyotita,
illuminated. Amala, crystal clear.
Kapolam,
his cheeks.
Udara,
prominent.
Nasam,
his nose. Translation: the yogi should then meditate on the lotus-like countenance of the Lord, who presents his different forms in this world out of compassion for the anxious devotees. His nose is prominent, and his crystal clear cheeks are illuminated by the oscillation of his glittering alligator shaped earrings. Purport: the Lord descends to the material world out of his deep compassion for his devotees. There are two reasons for the Lord's appearance or incarnation in the material world. Whenever there is a discrepancy in the discharge of religious principles, and there is a prominence of your religion, the Lord descends for the protection of the devotees and the destruction of the non-devotees. When he appears, his main purpose is to give solace to his devotees. He does not have to come himself to destroy the demons, for he has many agents. Even the external energy, Maya, has sufficient strength to kill them. But when he comes to show compassion to his devotees, he kills the non-devotees as a matter of course. The Lord appears in a particular form, loved by a particular type of devotee. There are millions of forms of the Lord, but they are one absolute. As stated in the Brahma Samhita, Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadam, and Antarupam, all the different forms of the Lord are one. But some devotees want to see him in the form of Radha and Krishna. Others prefer him as Sita and Ramachandra. Others would like to see him as Lakshmi Narayan. And others want to see him as four-handed Narayan. Vasudeva. The Lord has innumerable forms, and he appears in a particular form as preferred by a particular type of devotee. A yogi is advised to meditate upon the forms that are approved by devotees. A yogi cannot imagine a form for meditation. Those so-called yogis who manufacture a circle or target are engaged in nonsense. Actually, a yogi must meditate upon the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead that has been experienced by the Lord's pure devotees. Yogi means devotee. Yogis who are not actually pure devotees should follow in the footsteps of devotees. It is especially mentioned here that the yogi should meditate upon the form which is thus approved. He cannot manufacture a form of the Lord. Om Ganatim Tasya Ganjanasva Chakra Militanyena Tasmai Sri Namaha. Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Sri Advaita Radha Shivasadi Govinda Vrinda.
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Today we want to speak about the Lord's affection for his devotees. This is something that you will tangibly experience as you advance in Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, it may seem that Krishna is theoretical for you. And as we have discussed before, the main thing that you can detect in your feelings in the beginning of your bhakti yoga kriya is just relief from distress. That's the predominant feeling. The nightmare is over. Finally, you're waking up. But it is a much more profound experience when you start to perceive the Lord's affection for his devotees. Naturally, living in the material world is a situation which causes anxiety. That's why the material world in Sanskrit is called kunta, the place of anxiety. So, you're always in a precarious situation in this world. That's the way it's going to be. If you're looking for something else coming from the material world, you'll be sadly disappointed. There'll always be situations in which you're like hanging at the edge of a cliff. And the unexpected should be the expected. Your feeling is that what problems will tomorrow bring? If simply things can just hang on and be all right as I planned for at least a short time, I would be so satisfied. So, we're always overcome by anxiety in this world, and we should understand the source of that anxiety. The source is the fact that we're living in the material atmosphere. If we're in the environment of anxiety, then obviously we're going to be in anxiety, unless we learn how to rise above all that. Now, it's not that Krishna just leaves his devotees to be anxious in the material world. No. We hear from this purport that the Lord is always coming, mainly to enliven the devotees, to give solace to the devotees. You know how in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Puttranaya sadhunam vanashaya chatushkritam. In order to deliver the devotees, the sadhus, and to annihilate the miscreants, Krishna says, I come again and again. Now, as you all know, Krishna doesn't have to come personally to destroy the demoniac. That can be done by a big wind or a big wave or a big split of the earth. Or, these days, you can see that materialistic persons are very busy destroying themselves, inventing ways to destroy themselves. So it's not that Krishna has to appear just to get rid of unwanted persons in this world. The main reason why Krishna appears is to give solace to the devotees. Solace is a very warm emotional word. It means emotional comfort at the core of your being. So Krishna comes to do that. He doesn't actually have to come even to deliver the devotees, because just by the fact that you're a devotee, you're already delivered from material nature. Puttranaya sadhunam. If you're a sadhu, one who knows the essence of life, you're already delivered from material anxiety. So then, the true purpose of Krishna coming to this world is to display his pastimes. When the devotees meditate on the activities of the Lord, the form of the Lord, then their satisfaction is complete. Knowing that, Krishna comes and displays his activities. Just think about what I'm doing. Just think about my form. And that will be the perfection of life, even while you're residing within the material world. This is Krishna's compassion. What the devotees need is not ordinary, cheap relief from material suffering. That's so insignificant. What the devotees actually need is to see Krishna's pastimes, to see Krishna's form. Now, there's one thing that's impeding our absorption in Krishna consciousness. That is, how much do we really accept that the Supreme Lord has a form? If you say God, the cause of all causes, you have to be talking about form. Form exists, so what is the cause of all the forms? What is the supreme form, the param rupa? That is what we should be thinking. But you can notice your tendency that when you start thinking about God, you immediately switch to the impersonal. Why? Why this bias? This is because of ignorance and envy. Krishna is so overpoweringly beautiful that when we're envious of Krishna, we just want to block that out of our minds and project God as something impersonal or vague, some impersonal force or energy. But the more that we understand there is nothing beyond the form of Krishna, Krishna is the same as his form, the more we'll be peaceful and satisfied. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord says, Aham sarvasya prabhava matya sarvam prabhava. I'm the cause of everything, material and spiritual. That I, that aham, means personality of Godhead. And when the Lord says, matya prabhava nanya kinjira sthita nanjaya, there's nothing beyond me, Krishna means there's nothing beyond him, the personality of Godhead. There's no impersonal beyond him. So the more we start to feel the supremacy of the form of the Lord, then we'll actually know peace. But our conditioned mind is always groping for something impersonal. And therefore we must be in anxiety. As soon as we try to ignore, for whatever reason, the personality of Godhead, then we're wide of the mark. And we suffer. When our meditation is fixed on the activities, the form, the name of the Lord, then we feel connected. Then we feel solace just by thinking about what Krishna does, the way Krishna does, all the things that he does. This is what gives the devotee's heart solace. We're hearing the past few days how to meditate on the form of the Lord. How to stare at the Lord's feet, even his navel. How to stare at his navel, his chest, his neck, his face. In this way, we're transported from the material world to the spiritual world. The deity in the temple gives you that opportunity. Krishna is standing there saying, stare at me. Run your eyes over my form and you'll leave the material world. Even a beginning devotee can have that experience. Just stand before the deities with awe and reverence and run your eyes over the form of the Lord and you'll feel that you're leaving the material world. Everyone's had that experience. Sometimes you forget. That's why even new devotees who don't understand the transcendental philosophy behind the Arksha Vigraha, the deity form of the Lord, still, they feel some devotion. They feel some need to bow down. That's because by looking at the deity, they feel they're out of this material world. So out of reciprocation, you bow down, just like the other devotees, even though you don't understand all the transcendental science. We shouldn't forget that. when we come before the deity, this is the opportunity to leave the material world through our eyes. By using our eyes to gaze on the form of the Lord, we enter the spiritual world according to the strength of our concentration. So everyone should try that. Just stare at Krishna. In the material world, it's impolite to stare at someone. And no one likes to be caught staring at someone else. Sometimes when I'm traveling, dressed as a devotee, people stare, and so you get different reactions in different countries. Just like in New Zealand, if you catch somebody staring at you, and then you stare right back at them, they get very uncomfortable. Because it's, because the culture here, it's impolite to kind of intrude on someone else's space. So sometimes I do that just for the fun of it. I catch someone staring at me, I just stare right back. In countries like India, if you're a foreigner, people will just surround you and stare. I don't know if you've ever had an experience in India. Whole villages will just gather around you and just stare at you and look at every part of your body, and then right in front of you disgust you. And and they're speculating, where are you from? Oh, they're treating you like some specimen under a microscope. And you can stare back at them all you like, and it doesn't bother them. They'll just stand in front of you and look. And then maybe after 10 minutes of staring at you, these people gather around you staring. One of them who knows a little English will say, "Which country are you from?" So, generally it's considered impolite to stare at someone, and we don't want to be caught staring. Krishna, you can stare all you like. The Lord is there for you to come and stare at Him. You should practice this. Every day come and stare. To your eyes, full satisfaction. You don't have to just whisk in and out of the temple room and just only when the Govinda prayers are playing do you look at the Lord. No. He's here all day. You can come and just stare. Come into the temple room, offer your obeisances, and just stare. And think about the form of the Lord. And your heart will derive great solace. Krishna knows this devotee is coming to see me personally, making a special effort. How would you feel if someone just decided to come and see you, to see how you're doing, and to think about you? You'd feel very good. Rather than just coming at the official times, a person made a special effort to see you, to see how you're doing, you would be inclined to reciprocate. But certainly, you're not obliged to only come and see Krishna during the official times when the devotees gather in the temple room at 7 a.m. Any time of the day, you can just pop in and stare. And your heart will receive great solace, and you'll grow in the understanding, the realization that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of God. You can try this. You can just come before the deity and chant one or two rounds. There's no law that says you have to stop at 16. You can't chant another round in front of the deities while staring at them sometime during the day when the altar is open. You can come and read before the deity. Read a few slokas. Offer some prayers to the deity. This you can do on your own. There's no other devotees doing it. I'm afraid to go in the temple room. Now, unleash your loving potencies, the first traces of your loving potencies for love of God, and just go in and stare at Krishna. You can come in, offer your obeisances, and just pray to the Lord. I don't know anything else to do, so I'm just going to stare at you. And you can just feast your eyes on the limbs of the Lord. Stare at the feet, the toenails. It's a unique experience. In the material world, you never just stare at someone's toenails. But Krishna, you can do that. You can stare at his knees, at his chest, stare at his face. You can just look into the eyes of the deity. Just stare. And pray to the deity, please relieve me of material desires. Please relieve me of confusion. And if you do that, you will get the experience of Krishna transforming you. If you take those steps, you'll have the experience of one day being confused and thinking, oh, I've got such insurmountable problems in Krishna consciousness. And you come before the deity and stare at the deity, and suddenly those problems disappear in your life. When you have that experience, then you'll be strong in Krishna consciousness. Because you'll understand, Krishna does care for his devotees. This is what troubles a lot of devotees, is that actually they have no, they're not conscious that Krishna cares for them. Therefore, they look for care in so many other ways. They're very insecure. Sometimes the insecurity is obvious, sometimes it's buried deep. But the bottom of it all is, does Krishna actually care for me? I haven't felt his care. Because you haven't felt the care of Krishna, you think. You look for it in so many other ways. Where's their care? Is there care here? Is there care there? Care is right there. But we have to approach Krishna. The instructions of the spiritual master are meant to give us confidence and permission for approaching the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we have to approach. In the authorized way, if we approach, then there's no harm. The Lord is known as Vrijabhastita. He's conquered by his devotees. He loves to serve his devotees. We should think about that. Krishna loves to serve his devotees. We all think that devotional service is just one-sided. It seems that way. I'll render service, and I'll render service, and I'll do this, and I'll do that. And then you fear, I'll get nothing in return. I'll just give all this energy, and there'll be no reciprocation. That is everyone's fear. Even in any ordinary relationship, you have that fear. I'll do this for the person, I'll do that for the person, but then in the end I'll be shortchanged. That's the fear. So you bring that fear to Krishna consciousness. What if I do so much service year after year, but then there's nothing? This is our fear. The fact is that Krishna will always defeat you in competition about who can care the most. We were speaking last night about the Leela of Sudama Vipra, who went to see Krishna because his wife was in anxiety that they had no food. She was right to be in anxiety like that. And those of you who have read Krishna book, you know this pastime. Sudama Vipra, poor Brahmana, so poor that all the veins in his body were showing, he was emaciated, wearing torn clothes. Yet, when he came to Rukmini Krishna's palace, the Lord invited him in after embracing him at the doorway. As the Lord embraced Sudama Vipra, he shivered with ecstasy, and the Lord had tears in his eyes. My devotee. We were discussing last night how Sudama Vipra, he never thought he would get the darshan of the Lord in Dwarka. But his wife told him, you please go to Dwarka. Because we have no money, I can't even feed you. You're a householder, you should have some money. Krishna will understand. So Sudama wasn't eager to go. But he thought, anyway, it's an excuse to see the Lord. So he agreed. But he never thought he would have a chance to see the Lord in Dwarka. He thought, surely they'll stop me. The soldiers, the checkpoints. I'll never be able to get to the inner sanctum of Dwarka and see Krishna. Still, he walked on the road to Dwarka, meditating on the Lord. And he passed through all the checkpoints with no problem. Dwarka is a holy dham, a spiritual place. Because the Lord wanted to see him, Sudama Vipra easily had access. You know the statement, just like when going to the holy dham. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur said, you can't buy a ticket to Vrindavan. You can't materially arrive there to the real Vrindavan. You get there by service. Those devotees who cultivate a strong service attitude, then when they get to the holy dham, they can actually experience something. So Sudama, by the Lord's grace, was allowed to enter into the inner part of Dwarka, where Krishna had his palaces for his 16,000 queens. And Sudama, without knowing it, he chose the palace of Krishna's chief wife, Rukmini, and he's standing at the door. And right at the doorstep, he hadn't even entered the palace, but right at the doorstep, he felt all the happiness of Brahman realization, liberation from material existence, showing how insignificant Brahman realization is. Sudama felt that just by standing at the doorstep. Therefore, you think, what's he going to feel when he enters into the palace if Brahman realization was so easily obtainable at the doorstep? So as he stood at the door, Krishna saw him. Krishna was reclining on the bed of his favorite wife, Rukmini, and she was fanning him. We were discussing this last night. Whatever the man would want, Krishna gets with no problem. Reclining on the bed of his favorite wife, the sheets are as white and soft as the foam of milk. You can't buy those kind of sheets in any shop here. Krishna's reclining on Rukmini's bed, and she's fanning him with chamara. And then Krishna looks up and he sees Sudama at the door, far off because it's a huge palace. And Krishna personally gets up from the bed and goes to greet Sudama at the door, embraces him, tears in his eyes, shivering with ecstasy. My devotee! And then he brings Sudama in and sits him on Rukmini's bed, gives him the prime spot. In other words, Rukmini has to move aside. And Sudama is sitting there, and Krishna worships him. Krishna washes his feet and takes the water upon his head. Krishna offers him lamps and incense, puja. All this for the devotee. So you know how when Sudama left Dwarka, walking back to his home, he apparently didn't get anything from Krishna. Apparently the mission that his wife had in mind was not fulfilled. Sudama never mentioned to the Lord that I need some money. My Grihastha ashram is doing pretty bad. We don't even have enough to eat. He never said anything. But Krishna knew his mind. The Lord knew his heart. You remember how Sudama, he brought some few palmfuls of cheap rice, very coarse rice, wrapped in torn cloth as a gift for the Lord. And because that gift was full of bhakti, the Lord was eager to have it. Then Sudama left the next morning all that night before he left, as he slept in Krishna's palace, he felt, I'm in the spiritual world. And then he left to go back to his hovel, his shack. He started on his journey. And what did the Lord do? The Lord personally walked with him part of the way. Supreme Personality Godhead personally walked with Sudama part of the way out of Dwarka to his home. And then the Lord offered his obeisances to Sudama and went back to his palace. And Sudama continued on to his home. Now, we can discuss this pastime forever because it shows the affection of the Lord for his devotee. It equips you with that confidence that Krishna knows my heart. This is the point we want to just stress. We want to stress this point again and again. Krishna knows the heart of his devotees. He's eager to reciprocate. Why is it we have this feeling that Krishna is just always going to be inaccessible for me? He's aloof. This is our fear. When actually the reality is that Krishna is eager to reciprocate with his devotee. So apparently Sudama got nothing. He didn't get any wealth. And what was he thinking walking back to his shack? He was thinking, how wonderful the Lord is. He didn't give me anything. This is bhakti. The Lord knew that I'm such a weak devotee. If he gave me a tiny bit of opulence, I would fall down. So how glorious my Lord is. He didn't give me a thing. Could you say that? That is bhakti. Sudama is appreciating the Lord's treatment of him. Of course, he didn't know what was going on. What was Krishna thinking? Krishna was thinking, this devotee has given me such a precious offering of a palmful of this glorious rice saturated with bhakti. I have no way to reciprocate. I can't repay him. This palmful of rice was the greatest wonder. What am I going to do? What can I give him in return? I can't repay him for his devotion. So I have to give him something insignificant. I'll give him the wealth of Brahma and Indra. What can I do? Actually, Krishna was feeling embarrassed that his devotion is so great. So the Lord awarded Sudama Vipra opulence, just like the rain cloud rewards the farmer. The Bhagavatam explains that the rain, out of reciprocation for the farmer's yajñas, you know, in real civilized life, you perform yajñas to the demigods in order for the functions of nature to amply supply you. So the Shastra explains that the rain feels embarrassed by the yajna, the offerings of the farmer. Like, how can I reciprocate with the farmer's yajnas? I feel so helpless. I'll come at night when the farmer's asleep and I'll sprinkle the rains at night because I'm embarrassed. I don't have enough to repay the farmer for his yajna. Similarly, Krishna's feeling that way. This devotee has given me a palmful of this glorious rice. I have nothing in my possession enough to pay him back. So, feeling embarrassed, I won't do it while he's here in Dwarka. I'll arrange something. When he gets home, he'll find out. But in this way, I won't feel so embarrassed. I can't repay the devotee. Actually, of course, Krishna always gives the devotee more than the devotee deserves. But the fact is, the Lord is feeling this way. This leela gives you insight into the feelings of the Lord for his devotee. What is the psychology of the Supreme Personality of Godhead? The psychology of Krishna is that whatever little thing a devotee gives Krishna, as long as it's with bhakti, devotion, the Lord magnifies. What an extraordinary thing. And whatever benediction the Lord gives to his devotee, the Lord thinks, it's so insignificant, I'm not doing anything for my devotee. This is the psychology of bhakti. Now remember this, whenever you think Krishna's hard-hearted, Krishna doesn't notice me, how am I going to feel care? How am I going to feel affection? I'll just render service, stand for me, do devotional service, do devotional service, girl. Do devotional service. You have this concept in your mind, it's just going to be machine-like and mechanical year after year. And then Maya starts to whisper in your ear, for the real spontaneous affection, come back to the material world. If your heart really wants to be satisfied, it's out there in material existence waiting for you. You already tried Krishna. You tried devotional service for a couple of years. Still your heart has these longings. Only I, Maya, can truly satisfy them. You know that. I don't expect you to be a complete atheist. No, I would never ask for that. You can still believe in God. But just realize that your quest for loving reciprocation needs to be fulfilled in the material world. This is the propaganda of Maya. When actually, Maya is just the shadow potency of the Lord. As Lord Brahma says, Chayeva Yashu Vanani Vavati Durga. The material energy is the shadow. Why would you expect fulfillment from the shadow? Why not turn to Krishna instead of Krishna's shadow energy? So in this Leela with Sudama Vipra, you see Krishna's psychology. This is the glorious thing about Srimad Bhagavatam. You can understand the psychology of the personality of Godhead. And you can delve into the psychology of the relationship between the Lord and his devotee. There's nothing more fascinating. How glorious it is that although the devotee is thinking, I've given Krishna something so insignificant, Krishna is thinking, you've given me something priceless, I can't repay it. And although the devotees are amazed by the benedictions that Krishna gives, Krishna is thinking, I give such insignificant, tiny things. This is bhakti. Both the Lord and the devotee partake of this bhakti exchange. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya explains that love of God is like a pool of ecstasy in which both the Lord and the devotee dive into together. You always should think, bhakti means two, the Lord and the devotee. Now, you need to watch in your life how the Lord and you are reciprocating. Go out of your way to give some attention to Krishna. Don't just think devotional service means just do things in a mechanical way. You can only come and see Krishna at a certain time. You can only chant at a certain time. No. Just open up and besides doing the minimum, take extra steps to develop your relationship with Krishna. Come in anytime. Just stare at the deities. See how that is? I don't have to do this. It's not the time when everyone has to be in the temple. I'm just coming in just to, out of my own desire. Go out of your way to do these special efforts for Krishna, and you'll begin to understand what's going on. So what happened when Sudama approached his home? He was, first he saw this effulgence coming from the spot where he lived. What's this? What is this extraordinary glow? And then as he got closer, He saw palaces. Whose home is this? Look at these heavenly palaces. And as he got even closer, he recognized the spot where he used to live. And he realized, this is meant for me. Meanwhile, what happened to his wife? She had gone to sleep at night in a shack with a roof falling in, wearing torn clothing and being completely emaciated by hunger. She went to sleep. When she woke up in the morning, she was in a heavenly palace and she had the form of a demigoddess. At first she wondered, what's going on? Naturally she wondered like that. And then she immediately thought, my husband must be on his way home. And he's been blessed by the Supreme Personality of God. So she prepared to greet her husband. When Sudama arrived, he didn't recognize his wife. He's wondering, who is this exalted demigoddess? And the servants told him, because along with the palaces came servants, they told him, that's your wife. And as soon as Sudama realized that was his wife, then his body also changed into that of a demigod. Because as we were discussing last night, Krishna does everything in such an artistic way. He pays attention to all the details. He didn't want Sudama to change into a demigod until his wife was firm in her recognition of it, because Krishna was maintaining the sanctity of the marriage. Very important in a marriage that the wife recognizes the husband, because you know, she fixes her mind on the husband. So therefore, as Sudama was approaching the palace, the Lord didn't want Sudama to change into a demigod yet, because his wife wouldn't recognize him, and that would cause, you know, some marriage instability. This is how caring Krishna is. No, it wasn't so crucial that immediately Sudama recognized his wife. And he didn't recognize her at first. He was asking, who is this demigoddess in the house of a fallen person as me? But it's more important for female psychology that she recognizes the husband. So, therefore, once the wife approached Sudama, then Sudama changed into a demigod. But these are all Krishna's loving touches in the past times. And how did Sudama live in that situation? He thought, a great devotee like Prahlad Maharaj, he can live in opulence and not be affected. I'm not like that, though. I have to be very careful. So through this attitude of living in all this unlimited opulence as a devotee of the Lord, and always thinking that Krishna is the enjoyer, Sudama became absorbed in Krishna consciousness and went back to God. So we should remember, Krishna is affectionate to his devotees, even to beginning devotees. You just have to take some steps toward Krishna. How do you take steps toward Krishna? Try to improve your service. Go beyond the ordinary. Go beyond the normal. Don't become just locked into this attitude of, okay, I'm doing whatever they ask me to. I'm following my schedule that they gave me. So, of course, that's very nice. You want to encourage devotees to do the minimum, to do what's expected of you. But bhakti means you can do even more. You can do your schedule and then have a harsh desire, I'd like to do something more for Krishna. And Krishna notices that. Krishna notices how you fill your so-called free time. If you use your free time for doing something to improve your Krishna consciousness, do some more service for Krishna, the Lord notices that. And you'll find out. In this way, you have fun in bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga is not some mechanical thing like a railway schedule or an airplane schedule. No, bhakti yoga is the recreation of the heart, doing things for Krishna. So just try it. Just try to go out of your way to do something for Krishna. Go out of your way to see Krishna, to hear about Krishna, to serve Krishna, beyond even what is your normal schedule. And you'll see how Krishna takes notice of you. Of course, we don't want to minimize devotees trying to just do their schedule. Often that's quite an accomplishment. But at the same time, it is a fact that many devotees can do their schedule and more too. And Krishna is always watching. Are you acting according to your capacity toward me? So we should be eager to go out of our way a little bit for Krishna. To look at him, to stare at him, to hear about him. I remember when I was a young devotee, about 3 months, and when you first hear Srila Prabhupada lecture, it's hard to catch his accent. So I remember one day, I was in Temple in Washington, D.C., on a Sankirtan trip, and I decided I'm just going to sit in the temple room alone during the day, and I'm going to play lectures of Prabhupada until I understand everything he's saying. I'll never forget that. There's just a special effort I made. I just sat in the temple room and just put on a lecture and just listened until I finally could understand the accent in every word. A devotee can do things like that. And Krishna does notice. But we have these feelings that it won't make any difference. It's just a little old me. That is not how Krishna operates. He's the master of affection for his devotees. So let's not forget that. Sudama Mitra will never forget. And by meditating on that pastime, you'll also never forget. Krishna knows the hearts of his devotees and knows how to reciprocate with them. That was Sudama Mitra's conviction. Krishna's treating me in the best way. When he had no opulence and he got no gift from the Lord as he was walking home, still he's thinking, Krishna knows best. He didn't give me anything. Then when he got home and saw these palaces and this little shack turning into a residence of the demigods, he also thought, Krishna knows best what to give me. So he lived in that opulence, taking it as Krishna's mercy. But he was always thinking, I should be very careful. I'm not like Prahlad Maharaj. I have to be very careful living in this opulence. Any questions?
What are the symptoms of one who's working under the capacity, and what are the symptoms of one who looks better?
That's why we need guidance. We might think we're doing according to our capacity, but actually we're not. That's why Krishna says, you want to know the truth, tadvidi pranipatena. Then you approach the spiritual master to find out, can I serve Krishna more? How can I improve my service? That's Krishna's system. When you act according to Krishna's system, Krishna's pleased. The whole point of bhakti is to please Krishna. We all like to please someone. But Krishna is inviting, please me. Just look at what happened to Sudama when Krishna pleased him. And he pleased Krishna.
That story could be taken by grihasthas that one doesn't have to work, one has to focus on worshipping Krishna, and Krishna will make all the arrangements for my material situation.
First of all, Sudama and his wife, they were a very harmonious unit. They both had the same vision of Krishna consciousness. They both agreed to live simply, very simply. We were discussing this last night. They had the same vision. From what I have seen, it's necessary that householders have a unified vision in terms of how simple they're going to live. So, he and the wife were united in terms of their agreement. This is our economic situation. This is how it is. But one time, his wife didn't have enough to feed him. And so, she thought, this is getting a little too much. So therefore, she inspired him to go see Krishna. She knew, you are a grihastha, you need a little money. We at least need to be able to eat. So you should go see your friend Krishna. She was fearful, as we discussed last night, because she didn't want to push her husband to see Krishna for any material. At the same time, there was no food in the house. And yes, Krishna did note when he first spoke to Sudama and Dwarka. Krishna was asking him, basically, what ashram are you in? You're not a renunciate, I can see that. But if you're a householder, why are you so poor? But Krishna didn't notice that. There's some other subtle reasons, elements of this lila that we discussed last night, that Sudama had a very subtle attachment for being a renounced Brahmana. So Krishna broke that attachment by overloading his opulence. That's a very subtle point. But Sudama was highly realized. He understood the truth that why should I endeavor for wealth when I should just accept what's coming as the mercy of the Lord. But his wife was also right that, okay, I agree with you, but we still need to eat. So, go see Krishna. Even Krishna was a bit amazed at first, as we were discussing that night. Krishna was thinking, when he first saw Sudama, what's going on? I always take care of my devotees. Why is this devotee so extremely poor? Has there been an oversight on my part? Because the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, Ananyas chintayantumam yejana paripasate teja nityavyuktanam yoga shemabhanya. For those who are always thinking of me, in devotion, I preserve the good that they have, and I bring to them what they lack. So Krishna is knowing. That's his psychology. I like that. Everyone knows it. I always take care of my devotees. If they're lacking something, I always bring it to them. Why is this devotee Sudama, my friend, so extremely poor? Has there been an oversight on my behalf? But then Krishna knew that Sudama had a little trick about being anti-comfort. He had a thing about being averse to any kind of comfort, anything that resembled material opulence. It's a very fine point. In other words, he wasn't indifferent, he was actually averse. So because he had this attitude of aversion, and no comfort, nothing. Krishna was reciprocating with that subtle desire. Okay, you're averse to all comfort? All right. So it was actually Sudama's kind of subtle trip. Better to be indifferent, but he was averse. Indifference means maybe there's comfort, maybe there's not, whatever. But he was just, he had an attitude of, you know, maybe you could say slightly fanatic. But you don't want to make a big thing out of this because it was very tiny. After all, he's Krishna's friend. But just for the purpose of our understanding, the acharya is illuminating this tiny, tiny point. But if you blow it out of proportion, then you miss the whole lila. Because obviously Sudama is no ordinary soul. He's Krishna's friend. Still, a little something there. So at the end of the chapter, Shukadeva Goswami explains that Sudama got over this little tiny hang-up of being a renounced Brahmana, being attached to being a renounced Brahmana, just by meditating on how the Lord deals with his devotees. And then when this last tiny, 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 tiny bit of material contamination went away by his meditation on the Lord's dealings with devotees, then Sudama went back to that. So it's just a little speck. Anything else? See, you can be satisfied just sitting on the floor and listening about Krishna. Didn't cost you anything. Yes?
Can you explain what a vipra actually is?
Brahmana. Sudama Brahmana. Vipra.
But it's a different kind of Brahmana, isn't it?
Oh, you want to get into those intricate details of all the different types of Brahmanas. Just take it. Vipra means Brahmana. You want to get into all the different types of Brahmanas? You might get out all the different details. You read these details in Bhagavatam. That's perfectly alright. And just to say Vipra to me, Brahman, that's what it is. Sudama Brahmana, Sudama Vipra, same thing. Otherwise, you want to get into the details of the Varnashram system that goes on and on and on. Very intricate. Some Brahmanas maintain themselves just by going into the agricultural fields after the harvest and seeing whatever grains are still left on the ground. That's a type of Brahmana. You can get into these details endlessly. Anything else? So what do you think? Is it possible to have confidence in Krishna? In other words, besides socializing with devotees, you also have to think about the personality of Godhead and how to increase your dependency on Krishna. Try to do something extra for Krishna, and you'll see.